city of Kerala hosts pilgrims mourning the martyrdom anniversary of the third Shi'i Imam. Lebanon's Hezbollah leader says that resistance will continue until the demise of the Israeli regime, which he says is close. And train disruptions in the UK, workers of the railway network go on a strike to demand better pay. And everyone from Tehran, welcome. Now, millions of people from across the world have flocked to the Iraqi city of Karbala to commemorate the martyrdom anniversary of the grandson of Prophet Muhammad. Mourners gathered at the shrine of the third Shi'i Imam to pay tribute to him on the 10th day of the lunar month of Muharram. The day known as Ashura is when the Imam and 72 of his companions were martyred in a battle with the army of the tyrant of that time. The battle took place on the plains of Karbala in 680 AD. It serves as an eternal reminder of the fight against oppression and injustice. Ashura has been marked every year since some 14 centuries ago. Some countries, including Iran, commemorated today on Friday this year.
People from all walks of life, young and old, clad in black, out on the streets taking part in mourning processions. During the first 10 days of the Islamic month of Muharram, culminating in Tasawwuh and Ashura, eulogists recite the events of the Battle of Karbala and Islamic scholars elaborate on the underlying message of Imam Hussein's stance against tyranny. Tasawwuh is the ninth day of the lunar month of Muharram. It is considered a very important religious occasion as Muslims worldwide commemorate the martyrdom anniversary of the grandson of Prophet Muhammad, peace be upon him, Imam Hussein alayhi salam. Ashura, which literally means the 10th of Muharram, is the day Imam Hussein alayhi salam and his 72 companions were martyred in the Battle of Karbala in southern Iraq in 680 AD, as they fought courageously for justice against the much larger army of the Umayyad Caliph, Yazid I. Imam Hussein alayhi salam is a hero that transcends time. His goodness makes him a moral example for all human beings worldwide, and foreign students at Tehran University have not missed the chance to mourn for the much revered Imam along with the entire Iranian nation.
We all gather here, irrespective of religion. We here in our Hayat, a lot of students who belongs to the different sects like Ahle Sunnah and other sects as well, they work for the love of Imam Hussein.
The very popular phrase, Hubbul Hussein Yajma'ana, this is the actual meaning of it, that everyone from around the world, no matter of their background, can come together and commemorate the martyrdom of Imam Hussein for one message. The message of Islam, the message of the grandfather Imam Hussein alayhi salam.
Participating in Hayat means like propagating the message of Imam Hussein, which is justice and unity.
Tearful mourners take part in rituals while educating the younger generation about the sufferings of Imam Hussein. The processions continue until noon. After the prayers, people line up for lunch. Many people consider it an honor to serve the lovers of Imam Hussein, and that is why they give away food not just to the needy, but also to those that have been taking part in the processions.
Cooking for a large crowd is very difficult, but we enjoy serving the lovers of Imam Hussein. It's an honor. Today we served about 3,500 meals.
The positive vibes that we get on this day is simply incomparable to any other experience.
The mourning rituals of Tasua and Ashura are considered an important part of Iranian culture, mostly because of the opportunity to reflect on Imam Hussein's values, his way of life, and what he stood up for. Gisumish Ahmadi, Tehran.
The Secretary General of Hezbollah has promised that the Lebanese resistance movement will defend the country against any aggression by Israel and will continue to support Palestinians in their fight against the Tel Aviv regime. Mariam Saleh has a report from Beirut.
Hezbollah Secretary General Said Hassan Nasrallah warned Israel Saturday against committing any mistakes or foolish acts.
The enemy is still occupying a part of our land in the Sheba Farms and the Kafar Shuba Hills, and over the past week, it reoccupied a part of the Qajar village. It's provoking, violating, and occupying territory while very insolently talking about what it calls provocations of the resistance on the border with occupied Palestine. From here, I warned Israelis against any foolishness or wrong choices. The courageous and honorable resistance front in Lebanon will not be lenient and will not give up its responsibilities, neither in protection nor in deterrence and liberation.
The leader of the resistance movement was speaking in a televised address in Lebanon, marking the holy day of Ashura. He reiterated that the desecration of the Quran in Sweden and Denmark is intolerable by all Muslims, calling on the Organization of Islamic Cooperation and all Muslim states to take a firm stance, or else the Muslim youth will have to take the courageous step of punishing those who have committed abusive acts against the holy book of Islam. Hundreds of thousands commemorated the martyrdom of Imam Hussein across the country, and they pledged their allegiance to Imam Hussein. They also stressed that the teachings of Ashura are not limited to a historic event.
This is a struggle between the right and wrong. And Imam Hussein teaches us how to defend against the injustice and how to defend the oppressed people around the world. He is a universal leader. And now we are here to renew the pledge for Imam Hussein.
Today, on the 10th of Muharram, we will tell our leader Sayyid Hassan Nasrallah that even if they kill us, we will be with him. They wanted to starve the supporters of resistance, but now on Ashura, you see people from all sects in Lebanon coming to take food distributed as voting offerings. No matter how much they conspire against us, we will continue to vow that we are with Sayyid Hassan Nasrallah.
Sayyid Nasrallah also expressed Hezbollah's total support for the Palestinian people's struggles. He also called for the lifting of the cruel blockades imposed on Yemen and Syria.
The yearly processions held by Hezbollah supporters are a manifestation of their unwavering belief that Karbala is not merely a political school of thought, but also a call to all humanity to strive for the establishment of justice and peace on earth. Maryam Saleh, Beirut.
Tehran court has named some 100 fugitive members of the anti-Iran Mujahideen Khalq terrorist organization as defendants in case to stand trial. In a public announcement, the criminal court also called on defendants to introduce attorneys to represent them during the trial. An indictment has already been issued against the defendants, to include Masoud and Mariam Rajavi, two senior members of the terrorist group. The MEK has conducted numerous acts of terror against both officials and ordinary people, killing large numbers. The terrorist group was also a key ally of the former Iraqi dictator Saddam Hussein's regime. Train passengers in Britain facing another day of disruption. The country's rail network is hit by fresh industrial action over pay and working conditions. 20,000 train crews at 14 rail companies have walked out of their jobs. Train managers, station staff, and guards are among the strikers. The operators are based in England, but the stoppage will affect cross-border trains to and from Scotland and Wales. Passengers have been warned to check timetables before travel, as large areas of the rail network are expected to have little or no service. The 24-hour strike could disrupt family holiday travel amid the six-week school break. This is the third walkout in 9 days that hit Britain's rail network. The country has seen similar strikes across other sectors in recent months. A two-day Russia-Africa summit has been held in St. Petersburg with 49 countries in attendance. Marina Kortanova reports.
Multipolar world and invasive security were the main headlines of the talks that Russian President Vladimir Putin held with African leaders. Other issues were also discussed in the summit, including the food security. Withdrawal from the grain deal with Ukraine will allow Russia to accelerate the research of relations with African states. The food issue is exactly what the authorities can cling on to restore the ties lost after the collapse of the USSR. Representatives of African countries see Russia as a reliable partner, and thanks to this, Moscow has a good chance to firmly gain a foothold on the continent again. Putin has repeatedly stressed that Russia is ready to work together, hand in hand with African friends, to work for the future, to build a truly strategic interaction and partnership.
In the coming months, in the next 3 to 4 months, we'll be ready to provide Burkina Faso, Zimbabwe, Mali, Somalia, the Central African Republic, Eritrea, with 50,000 tons of grain and fertilizer free of charge, and we will also provide free delivery of these products to consumers.
Moscow has once again written off $23 billion as part of African debt relief, implementing energy projects in 30 African countries, and is ready to settle accounts with African countries in national currencies. The descendants of prominent African leaders announced the creation of the Pan-African Anti-Colonial Legacy Forum. Among them are the descendants of Nelson Mandela, Gamal Abdel Nasser, Ahmed Ben Bella, Julius Nyerere, Samora Machel. New branches of Russian universities will be opened in Africa together with the enrollment increase of African students in Russian universities.
Russia has delayed its return to Africa. We should have done this earlier, especially since Moscow has such a good heritage in Africa. In Soviet times, Moscow has always supported liberation movements in Africa, supported humanitarian and economically. The USSR built a lot in Africa, developed a huge number of projects. After the USSR collapse, Russia was deceived in its choice of a pro-Western vector. The result is the expansion of NATO countries by its the border. Moscow is once again resuming its relations with Africa countries when the grain deal is completed and African countries again need Russia's help.
The Russia-Africa summit was attended by representatives of those countries that are fed up with the Western approach and presented the majority of the African continent.
With Russia's strong return to Africa, the continent's leaders saw an opportunity to completely get rid of Western colonialism. They can also now tap into their natural resources and benefit from Russian experience in various fields such as security, agriculture and energy to fuel the growth of their countries. Марина Картунова, Moscow.
A court visit for the son of the president of the U.S. Has not gone as expected and led to widespread accusations of corruption. Pressure is now mounting on Joe Biden to explain his business dealing with his son, Hunter, who just saw his very favorable legal plea bargain held up by a federal judge. From Chicago, Rami Mazahari has the story.
Hunter Biden, the son of President Joe Biden, continues to produce shocking allegations of influence peddling and corruption at the highest levels of the government of the United States. A federal judge surprisingly refused to rubber stamp a plea agreement Hunter Biden obtained, which would reduce gun charges and millions in tax evasion to mere misdemeanors, and also give him broad immunity from a wide range of potential federal crimes related to his work with a Ukrainian energy company and elsewhere. 70% of voters say Hunter Biden got such a lenient plea agreement because of who his father is.
I do agree with that. People who are higher do have some power. So, I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if, yeah, he did get away with a misdemeanor instead of a felony.
The best you can say about this is Hunter Biden is getting a sweetheart deal that no other American who wasn't rich and had a father as the president would ever get, ever. The president of the United States was potentially involved in his business dealings. I mean, that's unbelievable. So I think we've got to get to the bottom of that.
Recent polls show that 63% of Republicans still believe Joe Biden's victory was illegitimate, in large part because of the now-admitted FBI disinformation campaign regarding Hunter Biden's laptop prior to the 2020 vote.
Well, I said that since day one. I said, get him out of there since day one. He's done so many things messed up. He can't even complete a sentence.
While many portray the United States as a politically polarized nation, the reality is that the biggest political affiliation isn't Democrat or Republican, but independent. And that the ruling emotion may be apathy, in large part because of Washington's endemic corruption from Nixon to the Clintons to Trump to today.
I think most people would feel that way and just want to see any miscarriage of justice. We want to see justice. That's just our inherent nature as humans. We lend toward that, and that's what we want to see. And when we don't see that, it discourages us, makes us upset, and wonders, and we begin to wonder how things are really working.
Polls in May showed that the country is evenly split on if Congress should hold impeachment proceedings against Joe Biden. Recent polls show that 60% of voters believe that the president was involved in Hunter Biden's transactions. The White House broke their silence regarding Hunter Biden by saying that the president will not pardon his son for any crimes. They also appear to have changed from the president's campaign promise that he, quote, never discussed his son's business dealings to, quote, the president was not in business with his son. Ramin Mazahari, Chicago.
That's a wrap for this news bulletin. Goodbye.
Comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.
When your horse returns to our camp riderless.
أزور سيدي معتمدي ورجاي
The ocean of dua
الإمام الحسين عليه السلام زيارة مني ونيابة عن والدي
Us to fend for ourselves, Hussein, Hussein, the slain.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم الحمد لله رب العالمين ثم الصلاة والسلام على سيدنا ونبينا محمد وآله الطاهرين. In the name of Allah, the most beneficent, the most merciful. I am Sayyid Muhammad Hassan Madarisi, and in this edition of The Ocean of Dua, we are trying to discuss and talk about the different aspects of Ziyarat Imam al-Husayn alayhi salam, Ziyarat al-Ashura. So stay with us.
فأسأل الله الذي أكرم مقامك وأكرمني بك أن يرزقني طلب ثأرك مع إمام منصور من أهل بيت محمد صلى الله عليه وآله.
Brothers and sisters, we have reached this part of زيارة العاشوراء. بأبي أنت وأمي لقد عظم مصابي بك. May my father and mother be sacrificed for you. فأسأل الله الذي أكرم مقامك. Indeed, my affliction due to what happened to you is immense. Therefore, I ask Allah, who venerated your station and honored me through you, وأكرمني بك أن يرزقني طلب ثارك مع إمام منصور من أهل بيت محمد صلى الله عليه وآله. Therefore, I ask Allah, who venerated your station and honored me through you, to provide me the succor to avenge for your blood with a supported leader from the family of Muhammad. May Allah pour down his mercy on him and his progeny. Brothers and sisters, this part starts saying, Bi abi anta wa ummi. May my father and mother be sacrificed for you. In Arabic terminology, such a phrase, I mean, bi abi anta wa ummi, is known as tafdiya, which means the expression of sacrifice. It is normally employed to show one's deep veneration and love for the addressee. Its original construction is said to be fadaytuka bi abi anta wa ummi. May my father and mother be sacrificed for you. So the phrase fadaytuka is hidden, it is elliptical, so that's why it remains bi abi anta wa ummi. May my father and mother be sacrificed for you. Some believe that expressing sacrifice is permitted, according to the Shi'i school of thought, as well as most of the Sunnis. However, some others consider that this thing is makruh, it is abhorred, and say that a Muslim cannot be ransomed. The correct view, however, is that it is not abhorred, it is not makruh, because it appears in our authentic traditions, from our sources. Our sources are replete with the instances of the companions of the Prophet, of the companions of the infallible imams referring to them, talking to them like this. Without any prohibition, and especially for the Holy Prophet ﷺ, we see this. Besides, what is meant is not the literal. Rather, it signifies kindness and righteousness. And for this very reason, one who does not have a father or mother may also say it. So that's why we say it is not that literal.
When people ask, I'm confused about which school is right or which madhab is right, go to Karbala. Look at Karbala, it clarifies it instantaneously. Anybody says, I'm confused, say, please go to Karbala and tell me what happened, why it happened, and what does it have to do with your religion. You will see it completely exemplifies. It clarifies, it takes all the blurs out instantaneously. SubhanAllah, that's the miracle of Imam Hussein alayhi salam. Imam Hussein alayhi salam's main foundation of morality is do not allow tyranny. Do not allow evil doing. Do not allow indecency. Why is Imam like this? Because he knows Allah. He appreciates him. He understands his dimensions. That's why we must love them so much. We must love them so much that don't let anybody else take us away from them. There should be no room in our thoughts. No matter who we admire in this world, no matter how great a person we look at, never move the Prophet and Ahlul Bayt out of the center of the heart. Never. They will know that their Khalifa lied to them because he told them they don't pray. And if they see them praying on the battlefield, their hearts will change. So stop them from praying. Imagine how evil these people were. That's how much lies they had. And you cannot eradicate this lie at the level that we are talking about unless you give your blood for the love of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala.
So, brothers and sisters, the zair, by saying bi abi anta wa ummi, may my father and mother be sacrificed for you, declares that he gives preference to Imam Hussein alayhi salam even over his parents. He is the one who prioritizes Imam Hussein alayhi salam over the others, over the best of the best in his life, over his father and mother. And preferring Imam Hussein alayhi salam over his parents is in reality preferring the peak of the truth, because the Imam Hussein alayhi salam is always and will be the manifestation of the truth and haqq. He never thinks or does or commands anyone to do anything that is contrary to the truth. readdress the Imam of the Ahlul Bayt alayhi salam in Ziyaratul Jami'a Kabira, and we say, Al-Haqqum ma'akum wa fikum wa minkum wa ilaykum. Truth is united with you. Truth is within you, comes from you, and returns to you. So, the meaning of expressing one's sacrifice of one's parents is this. This is prioritizing. We are trying to declare that Imam Hussein is a priority even over our parents. Whatever he says, whatever he does is taken as preference. His words precede the words even of our beloved parents. Hence, if all there is any kind of contradiction between him and our parents, he takes priority. If we ponder over this carefully, we would come to realize that whether we express the words of sacrifice or not, the Imams of the Ahlul Bayt always have a priority over every believer, because they are the epitomes of religion, and whatever they say or do is in complete harmony with the pleasure of Allah. In the beautiful words of Sayyid al-Shuhada, the pleasure of Allah is our pleasure. And this is what he has said. Thank you, brothers and sisters, for staying with us in this episode. We ask the Almighty Allah to set us among the guided ones and the people of the straight path. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
أنت الذي صنعت من الرمح منبرا ظمآن والزمان بعينيك ممطرا نعم الأمير أنت حسين وقدوتي ساروا إليك قلبي وعقلي ودمعتي يا محيي الكرامة تبكيك كل عين لبيك يا إمامي لبيك يا حسين بالروح بالدم لبيك يا حسين بالروح بالدم لبيك يا حسين لبيك يا
Hello, I'm Mubarak Kenya, and a big welcome to this week's edition of Africa Today.
Stay tuned with Africa Today.
Africa Today.
Hello, and a warm welcome to Africa Today, a show that keeps you updated on events taking place across Africa, from the ever-changing political landscape, the evolving social scene, innovation and technology, to massive natural resources. We bring the continent closer to you. My name is Mubarak Kenya, and this is Africa Today. In today's episode, we are focusing on the recent visit to Africa by Iran's President Ibrahim Raisi. He visited Kenya, Uganda, and Zimbabwe, heading a high-ranking delegation of ministers, diplomats, and private sector representatives. This landmark visit has been dubbed a success, as it opened new frontiers for cooperation between the Islamic Republic and African countries.
Achievements of Iran's president's visit to Africa. On the 11th of July, Iran's president embarked on a three-nation visit to Africa for the first trip in 11 years by an Iranian president. The visit aimed at increasing Iran's footprints in a continent that is set to outperform the rest of the world in economic growth over the next 2 years. Iran's President Ebrahim Raisi has arrived in Kenya on the first leg of his three-nation tour of Africa. The president was greeted at the Nairobi airport by Kenya's Foreign Secretary Alfred Mutua and later received an official welcome from his Kenyan counterpart William Ruto at the State House. a 21-gun salute was performed in honor of the Iranian president and his accompanying delegation. Addressing a joint press conference after holding talks with President Ebrahim Raisi, Kenya's President William Ruto said his country will exploit the strong ties it enjoys with Iran to expand trade.
It is a special privilege to host President Raisi in Nairobi, and his presence is testimony to the strong ties between Kenya and Iran. It is also a demonstration of our shared commitment to cooperate for the benefit of the people of our two countries. I am delighted to report that President Raisi and I have just concluded highly productive bilateral discussions on a broad range of very important issues. During our meeting, I affirmed to His Excellency President Raisi the important place of Iran as a critical strategic partner for Kenya and the value that we place on the friendly and fraternal relations between our two countries. On our historical engagement and areas of cooperation and development that include education, scholarship, infrastructure, health, water, fisheries, agriculture and housing, urban and metropolitan development, among other areas, I expressed our gratitude and commitment to expand and deepen these relations. President Raisi and I had the opportunity to engage views and share ideas about emerging opportunities to improve the balance of trade between our two countries. Kenya and Iran are strategically situated to be each other's key points of entry into our respective regions.
Speaking at the joint presser with his Kenyan counterpart, Iran's president said that the Islamic Republic warmly shakes the hands of all African governments for cooperation. He noted that Iran is ready to share its experiences, especially technology, with Kenya.
We have a wealth of experience in the field of economy and science and technology. Today, in the field of petrochemical products, in agriculture, and also in science and technology, we have a wealth of experience which could be great candidates and nomination for cooperation. One is the health. Well, health and medical equipment could be a fertile ground for cooperation. In terms of pharmaceutical and medical equipment, we could have cooperation with each other in the field of agriculture and fisheries. We could establish very productive cooperation in other business fields. As the president has correctly pointed out and noted in his speeches, we could have cooperation in other business fields.
To get some insight into President Raisi's visit to Kenya, we contacted Jafar Barmaki, Iran's ambassador to Kenya. Now, Mr. Ambassador, can you tell us the significance of President Ibrahim Raisi's visit to Africa, particularly at this juncture when the world is shifting from a unipolar international system to a multipolar approach of global affairs?
As you know very well, visits by heads of states to different regions often serves various purposes, including political, economic, and diplomatic objectives. When a president visits Africa, it can indicate a desire to strengthen bilateral relations, explore trade opportunities, engage in cultural exchanges, or seek support on specific international issues. Regarding the shift from a unipolar international system to a multipolar approach, this generally refers to a change in the distribution of power and influence among multiple countries on the global stage. In such a context, visits by leaders can be seen as an attempt to build alliance, establish partnerships, to navigate this evolving global landscape. To fully understand the significance of President Raisi's visit to Africa and its implication within the challenging global order, it is important to consider the specific objectives, agreements, and outcomes of the visit, as well as the broader geopolitical dynamics and regional interests at play.
A significant achievement of President Raisi's visit to Kenya was the launch of two Iranian-made agricultural and mapping drones at Iran's House of Innovation and Technology in the Kenyan capital of Nairobi. President Raisi visited this tech hub where he unveiled Pelican multi-purpose agricultural drone and Dorna mapping drone, both manufactured by Iranian knowledge-based companies.
Kenyan President William Ruto has also hailed this Iranian tech center, saying it is a highway to bring Kenyan youth to knowledge and technology. Let's take a listen.
Kenya is also highly encouraged by the great interest shown by Iran in promoting technological and entrepreneurial innovation among Kenyan youth by promoting incubation of Kenya's startups and creative industry through the Iran House Innovation and Technology Center. This is an outstanding intervention that is innovative and directly aligned with our national aspiration towards creating a digital superhighway and a robust digital economy as primary pillars of the bottom-up economic transformation agenda. As a global innovation powerhouse, Iran has made significant progress in the development and deployment of modern technologies in key industries such as agriculture, manufacturing, and telecommunication. I have therefore invited wider and deeper collaboration in these and other critical sectors in the interest of our shared socioeconomic development objectives.
Ambassador Barmaki, can you elaborate here on the importance of Iran's House of Innovation and Technology to Kenya and indeed the rest of Africa?
President Raisi's visit to House of Innovation and Technology, let's say Iran House of Innovation and Technology, in abbreviation we call it IHIT, and unveiling of agricultural drones indicate a potential opportunity for technology transfer and knowledge exchange between Iran and Kenya. Collaboration between these two countries can facilitate the transfer of expertise, promote innovation, and foster capacity building in the agricultural section, as we do now, but we intend to expand it. These can contribute to the development of local knowledge-based industries and growth of African drone technology sector. The adoption of such kind of technologies can create also economic opportunities such as job creation and growth of associated industries.
Now, Kenya, a leading East African economy, is also set to benefit from Iran's automobile technology. Kenyan president announced that the Islamic Republic of Iran will launch an automobile assembly factory in the Kenyan strategic port of Mombasa, a move that is expected to create employment and boost the industrial capacity of this East African nation.
His Excellency President Raisi conveyed to me information that will be good news for stakeholders in our mechanical and automotive sector, including dealers, engineers, technicians, and other workers. Iran's intention to set up a motor vehicle assembly plant in Mombasa to manufacture an indigenous Iranian vehicle that has now been given the Kiswahili name Kifaru, meaning rhino. And I hope it will be a tough one, Your Excellency. I am confident that the project is unstoppable, as this name suggests.
The manufacture of Iranian automobiles in Kenya is an entry point for the wider East African community bloc composed of seven countries. Now, this economic bloc has a population of nearly 283 million people. Now, Ambassador Barmaki, Kenya is famously known as the gateway to East Africa. Can you elaborate on the significance of the visit of the president to this country?
President Raisi's visit to Kenya could carry several significant implications, especially considering Kenya's reputation as the gateway to East Africa. If I want to refer to some of them, I can say that visits by heads of state often aim to enhance diplomatic ties and cooperation between countries. President Raisi's visit to Kenya could signify a desire to deepen and strengthen the relationship between Iran and Kenya. It may involve discussions on various topics such as trade, investment, security, and cultural exchanges. As we know very well, Kenya is one of the largest economies in East Africa and serves as a regional economic hub. It's a strategic location, well-developed infrastructure, and business-friendly environment make it an attractive destination for investment and trade. President Raisi's visit may involve exploring economic opportunities and establishing partnerships in sectors such as energy, infrastructure, agriculture, or technology.
Well, thank you for that, Mr. Ambassador. We now take a short break before we continue with our program focusing on President Ibrahim Raisi's visit to Kenya. Stay with us.
Iran and Kenya are also working closely in the health sector. Iranian Red Crescent Society has several clinics in different African countries. In Kenya's capital, Nairobi, Iran operates two medical clinics providing services to the needy in this country. Iran's support for Kenya's health sector has been described by President Ruto as critical in attainment of universal health in this country.
His Excellency the President and I noted that Iran is already an important partner in Kenya's health services sector and maintains two health centers in Nairobi to actualize the universal health objective of our administration, which is a critical pillar of our agenda. We continue to invite and learn from the expertise of countries like Iran, which has achieved a great degree of advancement in medicine and modern medical technology.
One of the highlights of President Raisi's visit to Africa was a special focus to the health sector. Iran's health minister, Bahram Einollahi, who accompanied President Raisi during his visit to Africa, announced plans to send special envoys as health attachés to certain countries in Africa and Latin America. He says that Iran plans to introduce its medical expertise and pharmaceutical products to African countries.
While in Nairobi, Iran's president also addressed a forum that brought together Kenyan and Iranian business community. Now, he said that both the governments of Iran and Kenya are developing economic and commercial relations and urged the business community of the two countries to put the realization of this goal on their agenda. We talked to Asif Karim, a Kenyan businessman who attended the meeting. Now, Mr. Karim, can you tell us the main agenda discussed at the Kenya-Iran Business Forum attended by President Raisi?
I think the visit by His Excellency, the President of Islamic Republic of Iran, Mr. Ibrahim Raisi, was a welcome visit to Africa. I think his main purpose was to establish a relationship with the African countries and obviously to look at the potential between the two countries on trade, on technology, and many other areas that I think has a great potential between the two countries.
Kenya is a global leader in tea production and other agricultural products. The Kenyan president appealed for Tehran's assistance to penetrate the CIS states. Ambassador Barmaki, what's your take on Iran being a hub for Kenyan products?
As all knows very well, Iran has the potential to serve as a hub for Kenyan products, particularly if there is a mutual interest and supportive infrastructure in place. Iran's strategic location between Asia, Europe, and the Middle East can offer advantageous trade routes and access to various markets. Being a land bridge connecting different regions, Iran could potentially facilitate the transportation of Kenyan products to the CIS states. Establishment of trade agreements and partnership between Iran and Kenya, as well as with other countries in CIS region, can lay the groundwork for increased trade. These agreements could involve reducing trade barriers, facilitating customs procedures, and promoting investment and cooperation in sectors such as agriculture, manufacturing, and logistics. For Kenya, expanding export markets beyond its traditional trading partners is essential for diversifying its economy and reducing reliance on a few markets.
During President Raisi's visit to Kenya, the issue of technological cooperation was one of the major highlights. Iran has reiterated that it seeks to transfer its advanced technology to African countries. This technological cooperation is critical for both countries.
Yes, the technology cooperation is the way forward globally, and it is paramount that Kenya invests in technology, especially in the agricultural field, where there is immense opportunities to grow due to our great climate, fertile land, and very hardworking Kenyans. Iran's technology is very well respected globally.
Before leaving Kenya, President Raisi also visited the tomb of Kenya's first president, Mzee Jomo Kenyatta, and paid his respects to the late Kenyan leader. Kenyatta was the leader of the Kenyan independence movement and was imprisoned by the British colonial regime for 9 years along with other nationalist leaders.
The Iranian president jetted out of Kenya following a successful one-day state visit. The departure ceremony ended with a parade by a military guard of honor. That's it for this week's edition of Africa Today, which was special on the President Ibrahim Raisi's visit to Africa with special focus on Kenya. In the next edition, we shall be focusing on his visit to Zimbabwe and Uganda. Goodbye for now.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.
Ask the followers of the remembrance if ye know not.
You're listening to the program The Key on IRIB English Radio with Shiraz Hussein Agha, a graduate of Islamic Seminary of Rome and a PhD in philosophy.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Welcome to our program, The Key, here at IRIB English Radio. Today on The Key, we are going to be examining a very important and significant question. That question is related to the conditions and the qualifications of the leader and the rightful ruler in Islam. As you know, we are in the month of Muharram, and on behalf of The Key and IRIB English Radio, we would like to offer our honorable audience a condolences on this most grave and solemn month, because as you know, this is the month in which Imam Hussein alayhi salam, along with his choicest of companions and some of his closest kindred, were martyred brutally and murdered on the plains of Karbala. Because of their opposition to the tyrannical rule and policies of the existing government in their time. And because they believed that that government and the rulers of that government were not qualified to rule and that they did not fulfill these conditions which Islam has set forth for a ruler. You know, this is a subject which is a very touchy subject amongst Muslims. Both the general populace as well as experts and scholars within Islamic studies. And in fact, the divergence of the different factions and sects within Islam, a lot of it goes back to this difference of opinion regarding what the qualifications of an imam should be. For a lot of sects within Islam, the imamat, the successorhood of the Prophet, is simply a worldly position. It's not a religious kind of position, and consequently, it doesn't require any great form of piety, or great form of knowledge. You know, there's a difference of opinion regarding what the function actually of the imam is. But if we look at the Holy Quran and take inspiration from its wisdom, we see that perhaps this is an incorrect assumption. For example, in one verse of the Holy Quran, we read the following, Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim, and amongst them we appointed imams who guide the people by our command. First of all, when we look at this verse, we see that God says, وَجَعَلْنَا مِنْهُمْ, meaning the actual designation of the imam is the function of God himself. It's not the prerogative of people to elect their leaders. Secondly, the function of the imam is to guide the people, yahduna bi'amrina, and that guidance, right, is the guidance by the commands of God, or to the command of God, depending on how we translate this verse. And in lieu of this function, right, when we could, in the continuation of this verse, we see that God says that the condition of the imam is when they had been patient and had conviction in our signs, right? So conviction in the signs of God and patience in the face of hardship, right, is what qualifies a person for the imamate and leadership. And when we look at the verses of the Holy Quran as they depict the story of the Prophet Abraham, right? God speaks about the various trials and tribulations that Abraham went through. It was only in the end that after all of this, God said that. When God tried Abraham with certain words, it was only then that he said that, "Inni ja'aluka lin-nasi imama," that I'm making you as an imam and as a leader for the people. Right? So, you know, there is this, a series of tests and trials and tribulations that God, he puts his servants through in order to assess whether that person is worthy of the imamate or not. And in, echoing the same theme, Imam Ali alayhi salam said, none can bear this responsibility, meaning the responsibility of the imamate and the leadership, except those who are patient, first of all, and have insight and knowledge of the circumstances of this issue. Thank you for joining us here on The Key. We were looking at the conditions and the qualifications of the imam in the light of the verses of the Holy Quran. And the hadith. Until next time, assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
That was Shiraz Hussein Agha, a graduate of Islamic Seminary of Qom and a PhD in philosophy, on the program The Key on IRIB English Radio.
You can also send your questions to English Radio at irib.ir.
This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1920 to 2020 UTC on the following frequencies. 31 meters, 9,855 kilohertz for Europe, and 31 meters, 9,835 kilohertz for Southern Africa, and FM 91.5 megahertz for Tehran. You can also listen to the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on IranSat or BAT 5 and Intelsat 39 and via the Internet. Our Internet address is parstoday.ir/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.